Hello and welcome. Today I am joined by Matt Anstey, who is a physiotherapist. He's founder at Azuro Physio and also more recently is co-founder at Aflex, which we'll touch on a bit later on, but it's an exciting development in the world of tech in the rehab space. So Matt, thank you for joining. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. I'm good. Yeah, just back from a skiing trip. So yeah, getting back into life in clinic, basically.
Yeah, and that when you were away on those trips, I mean, it sounded like a really good one away with your crew, but how easy is it for you to switch off?
It's tricky. I'm trying to get better at it. My wife tells me off because I'm not I'm doing emails in the morning and I'm trying to multitask a little bit. I'm trying to improve the conditions of that. I have a physio that works in the clinic, so I'm trying to kind of create more autonomy through Andrew is his name, and I'm hoping that that kind of offloads me and allows me to take some more holiday without the guilt. I think when you're a one-man clinic, I was the only physio up until recently. Patient rings you up on the Thursday as you're about to leave for the airport and needs a physio appointment, and that's a really kind of tricky situation. You have to kind of say, "I'm really sorry, there's nothing I can do," but now having some backup really helps.
Yeah. So like what did you do before then?
I'm lucky enough to, have a few friends who do physiotherapy. So sometimes you lose the, you lose the lead, so to speak, and they go off and I know some good clinics in the area, so I have no qualms in recommending some of the good physios in the area. And it depends on where they're based, but sometimes if they've been recommended to come and see me, they're more than happy to wait. It's normally the really acute, really painful stuff that people want seen more quickly. So I've got most of my business historically through word of mouth. I built my clinic up while splitting my time, part-time NHS, part-time, building up my private clinic. And so now most of my work comes from word of mouth. People want to come and see me because their friends or their family members see me, and that's kind of a really nice place to be. But now I'm trying to bring Andrew on board. I've noticed people are more, it's difficult because people have been recommended to come and see me, and so it's a blessing and a curse now because you're trying to gently encourage these people to go and see Andrew, who's a, he was my senior in the NHS. He's a great physio, but they want to see me, so I've sort of been trying to experiment with some marketing that brings it people. It's more trying to get people to come to see the brand of Azuro Physiotherapy. And kind of reassure them that anyone can help them. And I'm trying to make myself less available so that I can spend a bit more time on this new project through Aflex, basically.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. How much prep do you think you get from this? So you've gone, we're kind of skipping over a few bits here as well. But so from university, work in other places, and then you set your own clinic up. How prepared do you feel for managing those sort of things when you set that up?
Not very, to be honest. I've got some friends who are in the management kind of fields within their jobs, but I've had no formal training, so kind of I'm good to have a good support network around me. My wife is in a managerial role in the NHS, so she's a physiotherapist as well. She's a neuro specialist physio, so she's done some management stuff within the NHS, so she's great to kind of bounce some stuff off of. Andrew is great, so it's quite easy at the moment. But the plan for 2024 and beyond is to try and step back a little bit from the kind of hands-on clinic face-to-face stuff and offload a bit more of it to some of the physios that I know are keen to build up some hours at the clinic. So I'm going to have to get really hands-on with the managerial stuff and the training stuff, and that I must admit that was slightly peculiar. Me trying to show Andrew the ropes in the private world a little bit, when he was my senior, and showing me the ropes on how it worked in the NHS, 10 years ago. So Yeah, it's kind of come full circle, and he's a great physio. He doesn't need any physio help. It's just kind of working out how to. He felt a bit reluctant to rebook patients. You know, just rebook if you need. And I was kind of trying to explain that, offer them the gold standard management. You know, be confident enough to offer them the gold management, and then work back from there if they're feeling the budget's tight, or you know, whatever's required. Because that's something I wrestled with a lot when I was transferring from less NHS to more private. I was sort of giving them all the answers. For example, like an Achilles tendinopathy, which is going to take ages to get better, you sort of give them all the answers and say, look, this is where you're going to be, and off you go. It'll take you 6 months, but off you go, you've got all the answers now. And the feedback I got through, you know, the word of mouth thing, so through friends or through friends of family or whatever, was they felt I didn't want to see them again. So it was my interpretation of it was, no, you know, you don't need to see me again, off you go. And their interpretation was, it was like, it felt like he didn't want to see me again. And that really kind of, you know, that really frustrated me, because it was not that I didn't want to see them again. It was just, I didn't think they needed that regular input. And now I realize that you offer them the gold standard, which would be, you know, these are all the things we can do to try and help you. And yeah, the patient can then make an informed decision. You know, I will say the chances are we can make your journey through this more comfortable, but we probably can't change the healing process, you know, the healing times as much as you know, we would like to as physios. So this is going to take, you know, x amount of time, and at, you know, we can help you along the journey, or you can do it on your own, and you give those patients the autonomy to make that decision themselves then.
Yeah, and look, so how have you literally then just taught yourself what you think works in that? Is that from that feedback? Is it from your own experience?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of, I guess, a bit of trial and error. I had, you know, the whole ethical thing of ethical rebooking. It's like, you know, you want to make sure that you're not. I really don't want to be someone who has a reputation of being really salesy, or, you know, this is, you're going to sign up to X block set of sessions. You know, this is it. I'm very much like, let's play it by ear. But I have learned that patients, especially if they come and sort you out privately, you know, they are willing to, you know, they want the gold standard. They want to get better as quickly as possible. So if you can offer them the gold standard of recovery, you know, and you map that out for them, you can say, look, this is where we are, and these are the steps we need to take to get you to, you know, running X distance or whatever the kind of goals might be. But you kind of map that journey out for them, and they can see that you know how to get them there. And then you can say, you know, we can do this together, or you can go away for a bit and work on each step, you know, on your own, or, you know, whatever's required, really. And I sit back and I stay quiet, and I let that person make a decision about whether they want to you know, come in. Some people want to come in every week. You know, some people say, right, can we come in 3 times a week? And you say, you know, if you want, yeah, great, we can, you know, do supplement this with some strength and conditioning. I'm lucky enough to have kind of quite a big, well, big in terms of the clinic size, it's a strength and conditioning suite. So we've got those great equipment, which allows us to kind of take people to new levels of their fitness, as well as kind of rehab the specific issue they're struggling with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's about to come back to that when we go through your journey. But it is interesting, isn't it? You've gone from being sort of your colleague working in the NHS, and then it's the same job, but completely different environment and dynamic and skill set, really, outside of the treating of the patient.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to have had the NHS to kind of, I started full-time NHS, and I just, Azura was just literally evenings and weekends. So that was when my sacrifice towards building stuff up was at its highest. I was investing a lot of my NHS salary back into the clinic to keep it, you know, pay my rent and stuff. I didn't have a very strong, you know, reputation in the community, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. And over that was 7 years ago, I set that up. And so gradually I've built up. To be fair, I did a lot more strength and conditioning back in the day. You know, a lot of people would call me their personal trainer, even though, you know, that's not really what I was doing. It was more strength and conditioning based, like quite simple stuff, and transformative physio, where you would kind of rehab people over a long period of time and get them to a level that they've not been at for years. And then gradually it's just become more and more kind of traditional physio based, with a, you know, with the strength and conditioning suite, we can still do the other stuff which people respond really well to. But it's like been learning on the job for sure. I've made mistakes. I've got a couple of people have thought that I didn't want to see them again when all I was trying to do was like save them money, if you know what I mean. You know, people kind of got some strange feedback in that sense as well. So it's it's been, you know, 7 years. You learn a lot, right? And it's kind of now I've been full time at Azure for 2 years, and now it's time to kind of push on and try and expand the clinic a bit. So that's where Andrew comes in, hopefully.
And so what made you want to get into this line of work in the first place?
Well, my mum is a physiotherapist. So I still remember going into her department when I was like really young. And so that, I have memories of kicking the big gym balls around the getting told off by my mum, you know, that sort of stuff. And then I played a lot of sport growing up. So I had a few episodes of physiotherapy for various injuries. And I just remember, because physio when you're quite young is like playtime, really. And I remember even from a young age thinking, you know, this is quite a cool way to live. And then, you know, as you get higher up with your sport and stuff, you know, it gets a bit more serious, but it really, you know, it almost became the expectation that that's what I was going to do. So all my GCSEs were geared towards sport and physio and stuff. And then A-levels again, you know, that was what I was going to go and do. And then I got to university and I found the you know, respiratory physio was like, oh gosh, this is not what I want to be doing at all. Yeah. And I found the textbook studying in year one really tough. I'm like a visual learner. I love to kind of interact with people. And then there were a few kind of moments where I thought, oh my gosh, I've got it all wrong. Like, this is boring. This isn't great. And then it was when I got on my placement years, you know, placements. I did really well in all of my placements because the moment that I could relate to real people and work out, you know, that's why this is important. You can kind of put all that together. And that was much more rewarding. And, you know, you're dealing with real people and you build rapport. And I love that kind of process of getting to know people, understanding their struggles, and then working out, you know, how I can help. And then that real kind of the rewarding process of someone who's been struggling with something for a long time, overcoming their issues, you know, that's addictive. That's really where it's come from, really.
And then, so in those periods where you weren't necessarily enjoying the actual course elements of things, was there a point when you did think, this isn't for me, I'm not going to continue with it?
I'd probably not seriously. I was a bit, you know, probably too much of a coward to go, you know, just say, right, that's it. And you know, I'm not really a quitter in that sense either. So not seriously, but certainly some of my placements, I realized I kind of had to really, you know, pull my finger out and make it work. The respiratory stuff again, I found the theory really not my thing. And I struggled with the respiratory side of stuff. But then again, I did really well on my placement because as soon as I could see the difference that you can make with people and, you know, you suction someone and their sats go up, and you're like, oh, you know, that's again, much more of the way that I kind of learn. And I just find how rewarding that becomes. That makes it easy to want to learn more about that kind of topic. Yeah, I mean, I did an amputee placement at Charing Cross, and that was really great. And I kind of almost sort of thought, wow, maybe I could go down into this, you know, down this journey. But in the end, I kind of came back to MSK. And you know, that was always the thing that I'd experienced as an athlete. And then as a, you know, that was what I kind of always had in my head. And I came back to it for my first job out of uni. That was MSK based, and then that was it basically. I, you know, never looked back really.
So in terms of like you being an athlete then, what was it like, what level did you get to and what were you doing?
I swam to a national standard, so that was kind of the best I ever got to. But I was just pretty sport mad really. I did judo, I played rugby all through school and university. I switched actually codes to rugby league at university. But I'm not really built, you can't see from through the screen, but I'm 5'7", so I'm not really built to be a rugby player. So, you know, that was never gonna go that far. But you know, I used to play every sport that I could. I still play squash now. I had to give up on the rugby just because, you know, it takes its toll on your body as a small player. You know, you're not really built for taking that punishing stuff every weekend. And I worked at Luton Rugby Club for a while, and I played and I physioed and I hurt my shoulder in one of the games, and I couldn't work for a couple of weeks properly. And I realized at that point, you know, you've got to make a decision. Are you willing to injure yourself to the point where you can't really work? And at that point, you know, that's an easy decision, I guess. So then now I play sports, and my injury risk is low. So I do a lot of strength training. I play squash. I barely ever swim anymore. Interestingly, it's probably the sport I play the least now. I haven't been in the pool for ages, but yeah. So it was the quantity of sport that I played, probably more than the absolute quality of sport, really.
Yeah, well, the national level at swimming is pretty good, though.
There was only one event. I'll hold my hand up. It was 50 meter breaststroke. It was good. It was I two of my groomsmen at my wedding were guys I swam with. They went to different schools and everything, but you just spend so much time together that we're still, you know, great friends. Yeah.
And so when you decided MSK was the route you wanted to go down and you graduated, did you have a particular vision of what you were going to end up doing work-wise?
No, I mean, my first job out of uni was for a company called Optimum Healthcare Solutions. I don't know if they still exist. I still keep in contact with the founder. And he sold the business, and I think it's been maybe rebranded or renamed or something. So I don't know if it exists anymore, but it was quite a big, they had quite a few clinics around kind of the home counties area. But it was quite a lot of insurance-based stuff. So lots of manual therapy, lots of, a lot of the trainings were around manual therapy. They were quite big on acupuncture and some of the stuff. And I realized at that point that I loved rehab. I found rehab where I'd done lots of strength and conditioning. I strength trained for a long time through my teens and 20s and stuff. So kind of I had this connection with the gym and the kind of strength and conditioning type environment anyway. And so I did leave that job reasonably quickly, and the team were great. It was just kind of, I felt that I needed to be somewhere where I could touch more on the rehab stuff. And that's when I got a job. I actually followed my friend who is no longer a physio, but he worked with me in Optimum Healthcare, and I followed him to the NHS. And that's where I stayed up until 2 years ago, kind of gradually winding down my hours. But I just felt actually I could do that. You know, I was like, I built good rapport with my patients. I kind of found that it was something that came quite naturally. And then you realize there's a lot more to business than just, you know, being a physio. But, you know, I learned that I was only 23, 24 when I started my own thing. And again, it started off not really, you know, I wasn't experienced enough to see loads of complex stuff. I just kind of did lots of rehabilitation, transformative rehab, learning on the job. And, you know, you're young and you think you're the best physio in the world for a while. And then you realize that actually you've got a lot to learn. And so, yeah, kind of really upped my game in terms of learning my trade. And interestingly, I think now the most valuable skill is nothing to do with really your knowledge. Obviously, that's important, but I actually think it's, you know, connecting with patients, demonstrating, you know, their journey, explaining their journey, getting them to leave your consultation, especially if they've seen, you know, multiple physios before. Getting them to leave that consultation with a sense of hope. I had a lady today who's had trochanteric bursitis type symptoms for 18 months. She's seen loads of physios and, you know, this and hasn't really worked. And she said, you know, I felt quite buoyed. I saw her for the first time 2 weeks ago. She said, I left your consultation feeling really buoyed about, you know, what I had to do to get out of this situation. So she came back in this week and she isn't much better. You know, nothing's changed, but she's kind of like, right, what's next? You know, these exercises are getting a bit easier now. What's next? Because she knows that I've sort of painted that step-by-step process to get out of the situation that she's in. And I, you know, I do use now VOLD dynamometry and stuff to basically show, look, you're weaker on this side than this side. You're trying to do all these things that are too advanced for you. This is where we are at. And then let's build step by step up and out of this situation. And she's someone who said, actually, I'd like to just work on this and then I'll come back when I'm ready. And so it's like, great, that's fine. Let's do it. And that's what I love to do. I love that feeling of, like, you know, helping where other people have not helped. And I love that feeling of people being completely, you know, not expecting you can help them, but their family, you know, their sister-in-law has told them that, you know, you should see Matt. And then they come and then we kind of work out, right, this is why it's not worked so far. This is the strategy we need. And it's so, I mean, so often you can help if you get the right rehab strategy in place.
So what was it like then? So when you decided to set your own clinic up and you were doing that alongside your NHS work, what were like the two or three things that you realized? It's like, well, I've got to deal with this, or, you know, these different issues that come up.
Organization was a big one. So, you know, just managing your diary and replying to emails, and, you know, you have to kind of be really on it. You can't have any systems that, you know, you need to have systems in place rather that kind of don't leave any room for error, if you know what I mean. You don't want to be double booking, you don't want to be messing people around. So I kind of very quickly learned that you make a commitment with someone and you kind of stick to it, and that's kind of a non-negotiable. And then, you know, all the accounting and all the stuff, invoice chasing and stuff. I'm still, that's probably my accountant will tell you, that's the number one thing that I could improve on, is I'm terrible. I hate asking people for money, you know, and if people have kind of come for a block and then they're paying me as a block, and then I'll find out 2 months later that they've not paid it, I just think, oh, I have got to go and do that thing where you say, excuse me, can you please pay the invoice? I hate it. And I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, even though they're mortified when you tell them. And of course they, you know, I just think it's just, you know, it's one of my least favorite parts of the job is chasing money. And I forget, I regularly take payment at the end of sessions, and then I have to text people and say, oh, I'm really sorry, I forgot to. So, you know, I'm still, that's probably quite a moronic thing to say, but it's like, not, you know, it's not about the money. It's kind of, it's just that process of, like, you leave a session, you're all excited and the patient's excited about, like, you know, this is why, where we go with it. And then you say, see you next week. And then you think, oh, oops. Yeah. So it doesn't happen that often, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, do you use Xero or anything like that? Yeah.
I use QuickBooks. And my accountant is kind of hot on me. She'll flag up invoices. But now with Aflex kind of building up and taking up more of my time, you know, that organizational thing is becoming even more apparent. I've still got invoices that I need to send from last week because I went skiing over the weekend and I meant to do it in the airport before, but then you see all your buddies and you kind of don't get around to it. So I've got invoices that I need to send that are 4 or 5 days late now. Stuff like that. And I, you know, that's always been, you'll ask my wife, she'll tell you straight away that my organization is probably my biggest weakness.
How about if you use the automations? Because that can be quite handy if you just get it to automatically send them a statement update. We do that a lot.
This is, my accountant has kind of pointed me in that direction. I said, yes, I need to make sure I do that. I think I did it for a while and then it really confused a couple of my patients because some of the transactions have been reconciled to the wrong invoice or something. So it caused like a big kind of confusion. And again, that like the horrible feeling of someone being like, no, I definitely paid that, and you going, but there's, you know, there's that, and trying to kind of, can you check your bank balance from this date? And you know, it's just, yeah, that's definitely my, you can tell, it's my least favourite part of the job.
But yeah, well, at least you're aware of it. So that's a good thing. So then what made you confident enough then to take on Azuro full time?
I was never like, this is, you know, the right time to do it. I think actually I started Aflex before, and it was starting to kind of get some compliments in the rehab world, and, you know, some cool people that, you know, I had nothing to do with but were in like elite sport world were saying, you know, you should really look into pursuing this. And there was only so many hours in the day, and the NHS job, you know, I did enjoy loads of elements of it. I ran the sports injury clinic for Buckinghamshire, and I, you know, I loved that, and I, you know, you saw loads of really great people within that, and loads of great kind of patients and kind of quite interesting stuff and really varied stuff as well. But it was stressful in its own way, as the, you know, as working in the NHS is, and there are pressures and there are, you know, KPIs and there are, you know, and I was just realizing that I just wasn't doing either of my jobs probably to the best of my ability because of that. And I spoke to my manager. I said, look, this thing I've invented with my brother is kind of just starting to show some signs that it might be worth pursuing. Azuro is really busy, and I work ridiculous hours already doing Azuro. And I basically spoke to my do it. She said, you can't keep working here forever wondering what if. She said, you can have your job. We will have you back in a heartbeat if any of this doesn't work out. So you will always have a job here. Don't worry about that. She even said, if you're ever quiet at Azuro on a Friday, we can fill a diary for you in half an hour. So you could literally call us up in the morning and say, got quiet day today. And you know, you can't have any more reassurance or, you know, assurance that's it's like a, I had no excuses. It's basically like, yeah, all right, let's do it. And there was definitely no turning back. It was like, why didn't I do this a bit earlier?
I miss
elements of the NHS. I do, you know, I miss the team, and I miss some of the kind of the guys that I work with, and my manager was awesome. She was great. So that, you know, there are things that I miss, and the variety of the caseload, you know, you get really good at your diagnostic stuff working with 14 plus new patients but 14 plus patients every day, predominantly new patients though, and you get really good at nailing a diagnosis. And in the NHS, where the mission is to keep people away, really good at showing them, this is level one, this is level two, this is level three of your rehab, so do this for this amount of time or until you feel, you know, better, and then do this and then do this, and then if you need to come back. So you kind of would see six new patients a day, and you would discharge, you know, a similar number each day as well. And so you get really good. You can't misdiagnose. It can't be like a regular thing that you do because your caseload just gets too crazy. So it's just, you know, in the sports injury clinic, it was just really good at giving you that, like, nailed on diagnosis. And then you come up with your management plan really quickly.
What's it like then in terms of going from like a team culture? Because if you're in a private clinic, you might be, well, for one, you're on your own. When you set it up, it's just you in there, and you've come from the NHS where there's however many is in your team. Do you spend much time with the team when you're in the NHS, and if so, how does that, having that people around, benefit or, you know, hinder?
I think the biggest thing is probably, I mean, the kind of camaraderie that you get in the NHS is great. You know, you're in it together, and at lunch break, you know, you're exchanging stories about, you know, I had this tricky thing or whatever. And, you know, the ability to work that out together is really good. And it is sometimes just nice to have that, you know, I've got this patient and I'm just, you know, what do you think? And, you know, just bouncing some kind of ideas off people, and most of the time they will basically, you know, confirm what you thought, but it's just good to have, you know, bounce some ideas off another physio brain and kind of get that. There were also doctors working in our department in the NHS, so, you know, you could get that kind of medical perspective on stuff as well. And then we were lucky enough to have imaging, so I could refer for MRIs or x-rays if indicated, and you get to learn really well, you know, when that is a good part of the management strategy, you know, when you think it will change the management plan or not. The downside to that is you get patients coming in and the first thing they say to you when you say, you know, right, how can I help, you know, what's up, and they say, I need an MRI, that's why I'm here today. And you go, oh, okay, you know, we can do that for you. And I learned very quickly that you agree to it there, and then you build their trust, assess them thoroughly, explain the diagnosis, explain the solution, and then you can usually say, don't actually think an MRI is required, and that these are the reasons why, and this is the management strategy from that. But it was, you know, that's a really great environment to learn fast. So I owe a lot to that department for sure. And I worked with as well, you know, Andrew and other people. I think the people you work with are great. And I do have, I mean, quite quickly, I've got a personal trainer that works in the strength and conditioning suite, sort of full time. She's got a first class honours degree in strength and conditioning, and she now has completed her master's in sports therapy. So she's an amazing, like, right-hand woman to have in the team. Her name's Molly, and she's been working with me for quite a few years now, since before COVID. So she's a great person for me to offload rehab patients onto, that kind of next stage where you transition from rehab to performance. And she's awesome at, and I trust her kind of completely to take people on help continue their transformation. So I do have, you know, I have that. I've got another trainer who kind of dips in and dips out, and he's just, he's an ex-Marine, nearing towards his retirement. He's not looking to bring in any new clients, but he's great as well. And, you know, having someone to, you know, chat to makes it sound really sad, but, you know, that's how it is, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's important. And how did you find Molly?
She found me, actually. So there's a big David Lloyd gym around the corner, and one of my old trainers who moved into a different, she went into corporate, so she just moved away from personal training, and she was the one that said, I learned everything I know of personal training from Molly. She's looking to become kind of more, you know, away from the big gym setting and more into the bespoke kind of programming and rehab and transformational stuff. As soon as I met Molly, you know, you see her CV compared to a lot of the other trainers out there, and, you know, she knows exactly what she's talking about. And interestingly, we don't 100% agree on, like, everything, but that's great because we challenge each other to kind of, and sometimes when she's stuck or I'm stuck, we can discuss why that might be, and you know, together we can solve most things. It's very rare that together we can't help someone.
So, and then talking about Aflex then, if that came before, like, how was that idea born?
My own misfortune, basically. I sprained my ankle in 2019, just on a run, just running, and missed the curb. Just didn't see the curb. It was quite dim in the evening on a Friday. I was in a rush to get out to see my pals, and I just don't know what I was doing. I just was rushing around on this run trying to get around my circuit, you know, really quickly, and I just missed the curb and just went over really, you know, at speed, heavily on my ankle. So it's lateral ankle sprain, and you know I started the rehab. I kind of got cracking straight away. I got an MRI just because I could. And the NHS probably wouldn't have given one of my patients one, but I'm a hypochondriac, just like every other physio. So got an MRI just to make sure. And it was, you know, it wasn't anything kind of serious, really. It was just a nasty sprain. And so I just rehabbed it. And everything got better, you know. My strength and, you know, all the kind of metrics got better, except for the stiffness. I just couldn't shift the stiffness in my ankle. I had a block of concrete for an ankle. And as I was saying, I I do a lot of strength training, so I couldn't squat because my ankle just wouldn't get, I couldn't get down low enough to kind of squat properly. So that threw everything else out of kilter. It felt horrible. Couldn't run properly, got anterior knee pain. And it's amazing that when in the sports injury clinic, you get the odd patient where they have a nasty sprain and you just say, I'm really sorry, but you're just going to, you know, you just accept that you're just going to be someone with a stiff ankle now. This is severe enough injury that you're just going to be left with ankle stiffness. But when it happens to you, when it happens to yourself, you know, it's like, I'm not willing to accept that that's just the way it's going to be. So it was actually, it took me a year, but a year later, pretty much, in 2020, in the spring of 2020, I just got so fed up with the fact that I had this kind of block of concrete for an ankle that I sent my brother, who's an engineer, so that was lucky, a sketch of like a new what needed, and we needed to build this device that could mobilize my ankle for me, because I tried bands, like resistance bands is a really common way of trying to mobilize ankles. You know, there's loads of drills out there. You know, I tried everything in my repertoire. I was asking my NHS colleagues to like mob my ankle themselves, but you realize that it's very dependent on the person doing it, the strength of the person doing it, but also the frequency. You know, felt like a real pain every morning being like, someone mobilize my ankle, you know, in a busy department where other people have got a million other things that they need to worry about. You know, I just realized very quickly that it's, you know, it's really, there's a real limit of the, you know, methods of improving ankle range of motion. So existing methods just weren't cutting it. And so through this sketch, sent it to my brother, and we in my mum's back garden, she had some scraps of wood and we were sawing and we were kind of like making this prototype out of wood. And we realized, because I used this makeshift prototype thing made of wood and I used it on my ankle and my range of motion. So my knee to wall, which is the kind of measure that you use to check ankle range, really quickly, it improved by 5 centimeters in the first go. And you could hear the scar tissue just like breaking down. And I'll never forget that feeling of like, it's like when you click your back or whatever, but times 100. It was so nice having that like release in my ankle just where everything else had failed. And I just remember looking at my brother and being like, oh my gosh, this is like actually a really big deal. Like, we create something that fills the gap. There's nothing out there that does this. And so we kind of, you know, what, I'm a physio, he's an engineer, he works for Jaguar Land Rover, and you know, it was just like, what do we do now? No, I had no idea. You know, we've got this great idea. So we got some help through some government grants and kind of got some business advice through that and built a bit of a strategy. Because we were just thinking, you know, we built this like rehab device, which is really, really effective. It works amazingly well. And yeah. It kind of just snowballed from there, really. We met through one of the government grants. We met Peter Thane, who's been really helpful for us. He's GB basketball physio, and he wanted to do a research trial on, I mean, we refined the prototype with those government grants as well. It didn't stay as a block of wood. He was actually the one that said, you're not thinking big enough. He said, this isn't just a rehab device, which is what my kind of physio brain was focused on. He was saying, you know, ankle range of motion is massively important for performance, for, you know, injury prevention, like all these other things that we hadn't really considered and I'd not really considered, having not worked in that kind of elite sport space. And I think he was particularly hot on it because GB basketball is like a jumping sport. So some of the best evidence around performance is for vertical jump height and things like that. So he was regularly using bands and some of the methods that had failed me. He was regularly using some of that stuff on his own players. And basically we built something that kind of made it so much easier and quicker and more effective for everyone, the athlete and the you know, the staff as well. So yeah, that's the kind of story. And it's just snowballed from there. And more and more people are kind of learning about it now and we haven't formally launched because we've only just secured medical device status. So we've just got medical device class one medical device status, which is a massive, massive thing for us, because you have to prove efficacy and you have to, you know, show that it does what you say it does, and it has to be built out of certain materials, and, you know, all this sort of stuff, all these hoops you have to jump through. So that took a long time, but now we've kind of got all of our ducks in order. So and that's, you know, that's why I reached out to you, because you're already doing it. Yeah, you're doing something that you have the experience, and it was just really kind of, you've been very generous with your time as well in kind of helping me to navigate a few of these question marks that, again, I'm a physiotherapist and I'm having to reframe it in my mind that actually now I'm a founder, and you've got to think on your feet, and you've got to learn very, very fast in a whole new dimension as well. So yeah, it's really, I love it, but it's like full on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, it's definitely it's a different thing altogether. I mean, everyone is to some extent making up as they go along. And I certainly have done and continue to do so in a lot of different areas. But I think what I liked about you is that I can see, in fact, you're doing something, like you're pushing on, like you've obviously got your own physio business, but then you've created this new product, and it's exciting, I think. I think that's what excites me, is when you see people that are genuinely trying to push the industry forward in whatever way that is. And I think it's a really exciting thing. But like, what would you say has been, like, what's been the biggest lesson for you to learn from creating Aflex?
I think if we were to go back and do it again, so we came up with the idea in 2020, so we're now literally 4 years on, and we haven't even like formally launched. You know, we've been so much slower at doing this, and I think we're learning, we're getting much better at this, but it's like, progress over perfection is one of the biggest things, because there will never be, you know, there'll always be a reason that you shouldn't do something, or you shouldn't jump to the next, you know, so you've got to make sure that you do the best job you can. I think my brother's definitely the perfectionist, in terms of he kind of loves to make sure that everything looks great, and he's done our website, and, you know, he's awesome. We couldn't have done it without him. He's been like such an instrumental part of this, and it's really cool to do something with your little brother, and, you know, take it on together. And so that's kind of what I missed maybe with Azuro, is like having a partner in crime who kind of, you just kind of constantly bounce. So we've got a little WhatsApp group, and, you know, it's by far my most used group. All my WhatsApps, more than my wife. You know, it's that kind of, we're constantly like, what about this? What about this? But you can get really caught up in like perfection. And James's theory, which I agree with to an extent, is that we're entering a space where there are some proper, well-backed products where the brand is super strong. You look at Vold, what Vold are doing, or, you know, look at your brand, you know, these are like established companies that look the part, everything works, that they have systems in place, you know, and it's really impressive. So we don't want to launch into that space and not be able to fulfill kind of potential, and, you know, not let people down, not develop, you know, we want to have, you know, systems in place that allow us to sort of, you know, impress people, I guess, you know, and I think we're on the right side of that. It's taken us longer than we probably would have liked to, and you get a bit sidetracked from time to time, but I think we're like really happy with the product that we've come out with now, and we've already got some ideas for once we're making some revenue on a bigger scale. So we've got some R&D stuff that we've already thought about, again, that's not been done before, so that's quite cool as well, because we think we already have the next step. So we've got one product on our website at the moment, and actually there's loads of potential around foot and ankle kind of rehab and other parts of the body as well, without saying too much. But we think actually we can become the kind of a big name in foot and ankle rehab, and so we, you know, making sure your brand is airtight and good is it's really important part of that, building a brand, just, you know, selling. Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, also, I think you should reflect, and one of the things I've learned a lot is reflecting on how much you've done, not just how slow it's taken in your mind, because to get a product from that medical device status, I know 4 years seems a long time, but it's not really in the grand scheme of things. So it's, I think you should definitely reflect and think, be proud of being able to do that, because it's, well, not, there's not that many people that can do it, especially alongside another thing. So no, I think it's definitely good to reflect and say this is actually really good, and the feedback I've had from some of the people you've chatted with as well is really good. So it's an exciting time for you. What are the challenges? Like you said, how nice it is working with your brother. So my brother and I have worked together on some projects, and we're very close. Like, what are the challenges you have with working together?
We're really close, so we're both Arsenal fans. So we, you know, we are kind of we watch sport together. We kind of, yeah, there's actually 4.5 years between us, but we're just kind of good pals. I'm the immature one, believe it or not. He's so easy to work with. So it's actually like it's actually a pleasure, genuine pleasure. I think the different in personalities works really well. You know, I'm kind of the credibility of the brand. I'm the physio. You know, I'm still am a physio. This is just an idea that came from something, you know, a problem that I suffered with. So I kind of now networking a bit more, and that's kind of where my strength lies. Whereas James is, again, like Mr. Technical. So I think the harsh thing on him is that he's not getting, you know, people, I have these interactions and people say, you know, you're doing a great job, and, you know, I'm getting a bit more of the plaudits. But like I say, James is kind of making sure the back end stuff is you know, going airtight. So I think we kind of pull each other up, you know, and I think another reason that I need Andrew and, you know, hopefully a few of the other physios that I've had a conversation with need to get them busier, is because the one thing we still is the time spent on Aflex. I'm so busy with Azuro, and it's just like, it's a really difficult conundrum of, do I turn down work to like block my diary and that's it? It's non-negotiable. I will not see anyone, even if someone on the phone saying, I need your help. You know, that is a really horrible kind of dilemma. And you know, my wife and I are trying to move house this year, so we're trying to move into a family home so we can start to think about family planning and, you know, that next step of our life. So I, you know, at the same time, I have this fear of like turning down income now for, you know, to block my diary for something that is, you know, an intangible like thing with great promise at the moment. That is, you know, I've made these sacrifices before when I was setting up Azuro, so I know what it takes, but, you know, I feel the pressure. I'm the breadwinner in the family, and, you know, we want to move on to this next chapter in our lives. We live in a 2-bed flat at the moment, and, you know, it's time to move into something bigger, to start thinking, you know, all our friends are having kids around us, and, you know, so I feel that pressure as well of like, I need to provide for kind of current and future family as well. Matt, it is as simple as, if I turn that person away and say, sorry, I don't have the capacity to see you when I, you know, have that gap in my diary, you know, that is the calculation is literally, you know, a mathematical calculation of, okay, I'll miss out on average X number of sessions with that person. So Andrew solves some of that as well for me. So having someone really trustworthy and reliable like him, but I need to overcome this, like, I don't want to see Andrew, I want to see you thing. And that's, I'm kind of gently learning again how to manage those conversations as well. But it's interesting. It's a real, it's fun. You know, it's great. Like, I keep having to remind myself, like, what a pleasure it is to be in this situation. It's all good problems to have. But, you know, it doesn't stop it from being stressful at times, and you don't want to do the wrong thing, and, you know, there are some consequences to actions, so you do need to kind of think things through properly.
Yeah, well, whenever you try and do anything, there's always problems, always stress, isn't there? So it's, yeah, like you say, you're trying to manage them. If you learn how to manage them and not get any stresses, then please let me know, because I think that's I've definitely not mastered it. We've been going for over 12 years, so it's it's one of those things. But then in terms of like your own professional development, like do you read any business books now you're in that world?
Yes, I kind of tried to brush up on my marketing quite a bit. So I kind of read around marketing, which I think has really helped me to, you know, what are we trying to do? If you know what I mean, you know, you create a very clear plan for each segment. So we now with Aflex work with Elite Sport. So we know what we are to Elite Sport. We know what we are to physio clinics. And sort of just slowly honing in on that has been really helpful, you know, and I've done sort of the same thing in the physio clinic. I'm not really, like I say, I don't love manual therapy that much. I'm a rehab based physio, and so the day that I decided, actually, I don't have to do that, that's like not what I do. So if someone comes and they say, you know, are you gonna do some massage or whatever, and I can say, to be honest, that's not what I think you need. I think you need XYZ, and 99.99% of the time that patient, as long as you explain why, they're happy to be guided by that. So the ones I knew what I was really helped. And so I think I've already learned that through Azuro. And so getting that right with Aflex has been easier. But, you know, we're going to have to at some point tackle cold outreach and, you know, the social media adverts. And, you know, that's a whole world that I have almost no experience on at all. So that's kind of, I'm really, and social media as well is like, I'm terrible at social media. I barely use it at all personally. So I'm not someone who posts about anything going on in my life. And my sister who does, she does marketing. She's regularly kind of telling me off on my social media. And I started working with a marketing company, and I was on a Zoom call, you know, just talking about and she told me that my Facebook was unprofessional because I, you know, haven't updated it for so long. She said I got told off by this person I just hired, and it was like got dressing down, and I just like, you know, slinking down in my chair. Oh my god, it's so embarrassing. But you know, now I know that all this is so important. So my LinkedIn is, you know, better than it was. I went to a Premiership rugby club with Aflex last week. Haven't posted about it. It's just terrible. You know, I need to get better just automating that process. Like you do something really cool and impressive that can add a lot of credibility to your brand, you know, make a big deal of it on social media. But I also want to provide a lot of value. So kind of trying to, I'm offering in-service training. So I've got in-service training next week at Wimbledon Physiotherapy, who again reached out to us. So that's the other cool thing is people are now reaching out to us and saying, heard great things about Aflex. How do we get our hands on one? They're signing up as affiliates. So that's great because they can share a discount with their patients who need it and kind of sell them on our behalf. And you know, you can get out to help a lot more people that way as well. And, you know, a clinician recommending it, someone who really needs it, is kind of a really valuable marketing avenue for us and stuff. So, yeah. Again, you can tell I'm sort of like bamboozled by a lot of this stuff, but it's kind of it's all fun, it's all good, it's good problems to have, like that.
No, it's exciting. So yeah, just like what would your advice be for someone who's looking to get into not only the physio world but then looking at starting their own business?
It was easier for me because I had like no dependents. I, you know, my mortgage was relatively affordable. Like I've been in a very privileged position in that way. But my advice is like, if you can take a risk and back yourself, because, you know, if you truly believe in yourself and you kind of have the passion about what you want to go and do, you go and do it. And it made it a lot easier to start Aflex as well. Interestingly, one Premier League football club said that they have one of the old physios created basically a really budget version of Aflex Outward, and they used to use it and the players used to love it. And so what's really interesting is someone has already thought of Aflex before me, and that information has kind of risen to the surface since we kind of, we like 3 years into it or whatever when we learned that. And so you just think all that was, I mean, Aflex is not a success yet, so to speak, but you know, if it turns out to be a success, you think it's not necessarily the idea, it's just the kind of the bravery to go and execute it. And you know, my brother and I have spent a big chunk of our life savings on this thing, getting it patented and, you know, getting it looking great. So we've taken a big financial risk, but it kind of felt like my brother and I regularly just said, we haven't got a choice. It's like, you can't not do it, you know, so just take the plunge, provided we're not going to be out on the street if it doesn't pay off. But it would be really nice if this does lead to something, you know, a bit better than it currently is.
Yeah, no, cool. No, well, very best of luck with everything. It's really exciting time. Well done for getting this far. And I look forward to seeing how everything progresses.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me. And again, thanks for your, you know, we've spoken on the phone a couple of times, just you kind of lent me some advice. And so that's really valuable. And maybe one day I'll be in a position where kind of people seek out my advice. I'm not wise enough just yet, but you know, maybe.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, I think you'd be surprised how much you've learned from doing all this stuff. So no, it's really exciting. But yeah, good luck, Matt, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you.